Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg and Carl Carlson's. I actually kept you on the line, Carl, so we could talk about this next topic. So welcome back.
Thanks, Fred. Looking forward to this one.
Yeah. So we left the last one off. We were talking about key product characteristics and how to identify those. In the middle of that episode, you mentioned that a major handoff of key characteristics, identifying them in the process in the product element side of the things, was that it feeds forward into the process characteristics. And you briefly explained it as if weight's important, is one of those things that we're really important, is key to us and is important and we want to pay attention to, it's then feed that forward into the elements of the process that controls the weight. So if it's a feeding, say, a cereal box, and we know that weight's a critical characteristic we want to do, is then, well, what's the process controls to manage that part of it?
Let me say a word about this. So before we talk about the details of what goes between the product and the process, let's just get a background here. In most companies, the silos are around product design and manufacturing process. Mm-hmm. And there are other silos, but in very many companies, it goes all the way up to the VP before it transfers over. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of companies have cross-functional teams, and their project teams include people from both disciplines, which is very common. Mm-hmm. But those silos create procedures that aren't as conducive to the handoffs. So we have to pay attention to the handoffs, because I can't tell you how many times I've been on site teaching FMEA with a product team that says, we never hear from the process team, and vice versa. The process team says, we never hear from the product team. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is so common, and it takes conscious effort to bridge that gap, and it must be done for the good of the product. It's essential.
Yeah, in many organizations now, especially, I mean, it used to be, well, you're in Detroit area, so the old Ford plant, you know, where he had his own ore and shipping lines to bring his raw materials in, totally vertically integrated, right? And they had no excuse not to talk to each other. They all worked for the same group. I bet you there were still silos.
Yes. And,
right? Whereas today, I'm here in Silicon Valley, and there's almost no manufacturing. There's some in the Bay Area, mm-hmm. but it's mostly aimed at very small or specialized stuff or prototyping. But vast majority of the products made that are designed here are made by contract manufacturers and other organizations. So now the ops team is the three guys, you know, the three people that talk to the contract manufacturers, and they're often there, not here with the design team, so that communication just gets more and more fragmented every year.
Which brings up the point of key characteristics, mm-hmm, because mm-hmm. if you've identified the key product characteristics correctly, and they get on the drawings, they get in the technical specifications, however you deploy them, that then creates the opportunity for handoff, the opportunity for communication, the opportunity for what to say at the web conferences. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think that highlights the environment you're describing, that is even more siloed or even more geographically separated. I mean, and of course, so many systems have supplier parts that are incoming. Mm-hmm. All of these supplier relationships and the geographic differences, they require good product characteristic definitions and highlighting which ones are most key.
Well, it's an immediate benefit. If I can just transferring over the design to somebody and saying, hey, we want you to build this for us, what do you think? And you dump 600 characteristics on them, and a good manufacturer will say, well, what's important? You know, where do we,
yeah, we, which ones are most important?
Right.
Exactly.
Now, what I see, though, is more commonly the question is, well, do you have a test design for the end of the line? Which is basically saying, what do you want to measure? Which then becomes what's important. I think that discussion really should be more about, well, given your design and what is important for your customer, the key characteristics of your design, this is where our process adds variability, right? So I think what ends up, it's not a one-to-one relationship, Carl, is my trying to make that point, is that the key product characteristics, I think, is the start of that discussion. And the supplier may say, all right, well, for this, you know, this issue here, the length here is, we've got that. It's very well controlled. Yeah, we'll monitor it, but we're not too worried about that. But you didn't mention this part here, which we know is more troublesome and could cause way more variability to you. Because I think it's that conversation of mapping the what's important to the design, plus the things that didn't quite make that cutoff, to what's capable of that manufacturer, that then informs the key process characteristics. Now, I think last episode you mentioned that there's another FMEA, there's a process FMEA, which is probably a great tool to take that input from the key product characteristics and the knowledge of what's possible in your manufacturing process. Is that, I stealing your thunder here a little bit?
No, no, not at all. I mean, that's you're right on the money, and it's the beginning of the discussion. You may not have it nailed right away, but you take the feedback from the supplier, you take the feedback from other parts of the food chain, and it's all good. It's all in the right direction. Mm-hmm. Let me start off with defining process characteristics, and then we can talk about how key process characteristics are developed.
Okay.
Process characteristics are process variables or parameters that have a cause and effect relationship with the variation found in product characteristics.
So it'd be like a tool sharpness or cutting speed or belt speed or pressure in a mold or temperature. It's the knobs and dials on your equipment.
Exactly. The knobs and dials on the manufacturing process or assembly process, and they affect the variation found in product characteristics. So if you have a key product characteristic, then you have to identify the knobs to control the variation in that product characteristic. Make sure it's right as close to that center as you can be. Certainly within tolerance.
Well, this sounds more like we're going to have to come back and talk about robust design. And I know that Perry Perendo has just been, this summer, started a series of articles, and we've got a webinar coming up, or I think by the time this airs, it'll be passed. But in and around this time, he's talking about experimental design and design of experiments. So I'll do a quick plug for Perry's series here.
Yes, very good. Yes, and there's so much to this subject, because the whole subject of robust design is to make products that function well, that what we call the sweet spot, that are reliable, that are safe, regardless of the noise and the variation and all the anticipated issues that you have in manufacturing and in product usage. And so robust design is a really important subject to reliability. It moves beyond reliability statistics, and moves it goes beyond that whole subject of reliability statistics into identifying the right product characteristics. So robust design can help you, is another tool that can help you get the right product characteristics, because it's in a similar way that we talked about in the last episode on design of experiments. So yeah, a big topic, a very important topic.
Yeah. All right. So I'll stop interrupting you. So you've defined what a key process characteristics, or just what a process characteristic.
So now if we state that the process characteristic are things that affect the variation in the product characteristics, then the significant process characteristics are unique process related characteristics that affect the ability of the manufacturing process to meet the product characteristics. They become input to manufacturing operations, and then companies can go further and say certain of those process characteristics meet the standard, or they're important enough that we designate them for highlighted attention, and they become followed up in the process control plan. Here's where you get the SPC charts. Mm-hmm. Here's where you get the all the different things that you do in a manufacturing plant. You may, because it's a key process characteristic, you might have special visual equipment. You might increase the resources that go into ensuring that those process characteristics are met.
Well, there's been two things I've always, when I was a manufacturing engineer and my work with teams since, is it's a whole lot more economical to control the variability earlier in the process. So if I get good materials that's consistent in its behavior in my equipment, then I don't have to tighten up the tolerances on my equipment as much. And if materials are what they are and I have to deal with it at the part, can I inspect it and make adjustments on the fly to accommodate the variation of it? Or the worst is you assemble your product, you put all the value into it, you close up the box, and then you test it and go, oh, it doesn't work. Now it's either very expensive or not possible to repair it, and it's just scrap. But the idea is I think what you're outlining here is if you go to a manufacturer and they say, well, we do SPC on this step of the process, we measure solder paste height in the assembly process for a circuit board. And if that's not a critical characteristic, it may align with what's important to what we need, or it may miss the mark completely. That's where the discussion has to happen. It goes to the manufacturer's benefit to control those things so that their yield improves. So it's a win for them. If we identify what's important to the final product, that they can move it upstream. And it may be up to their suppliers to where that control plan goes into place. But it's the starting point.
I think you have a fundamental principle there. The further upstream you go, the better. Mm-hmm. If you can move it to the upstream to the supplier, and the supplier has a robust design, and they've identified, they know what the key product characteristics are that are essential, they know the key process characteristics, and their manufacturing process is robust and accomplishes what it needs to, then the incoming parts to the manufacturing plant are in much better condition, mm-hmm. and they're more likely to assemble without problems. So yeah, moving upstream is an important part of achieving high quality products. Also, knowing what is critical mm-hmm. in terms of key product characteristics can help you identify which products and which portions of the products to work with suppliers, so they're not overwhelmed that everything is the same level of importance.
Well, you know, one of the challenges that we get is, I mean, if you're a big enough manufacturer and with enough volume, you get dedicated lines, and they can optimize that line, that production facility, for your product. And this works great in those situations, right? There's a lot of development work and a lot of communication to bring up and focus. And you may even have dedicated manufacturing engineers that's what they do for you. Where more and more companies, though, Carl, are relatively small volumes, and they're going to these large manufacturers that they'll run your product on Monday once a month, and then that line gets completely shifted over to somebody else's product, and then to somebody else's product. The discussion about what's key and what's important, I certainly can help in that, right? But does that add another layer of complexity to identifying these key processes?
I wouldn't say it adds complexity to identifying them. It adds a complexity to achieving them. Mm-hmm. The changeover that you're describing is a complexity, and it's an opportunity for error to introduce.
It's the opportunity to screw it up.
Yes. Absolutely. And so, but once again, if you understand what's key from a product standpoint and a process standpoint, then you can focus the efforts on the changeover mm-hmm. to achieve that.
Well, I mean, we start with the product characteristic, the key ones, and we look at that. And then I'm thinking there's design of experiments type tools and process capability type stuff, both of which take quite an investment. How do you get your supplier, especially when it's a contract manufacturer, and you know we're always conscious about cost, how do you make that work where you use these tools to really hone in on what's the key process characteristics?
Yeah, the same methods that identify key product characteristics can be used by suppliers or manufacturing and assembly operations to identify key process characteristics. So let me review those and characterize them on a manufacturing process. If the supplier is making widgets, the supplier can do one of three things to identify key process characteristics, providing they have input, the key product characteristics. That's essential input. Mm-hmm. So the supplier can use their teams, their subject matter expert teams. They get the experts together and use engineering judgment. And they say, okay, it's essential that we hold this dimension, dimension X. Mm-hmm. What do we need to do to hold that? And that would be engineering judgment.
Okay.
A second way is the methodologies, like you described, design of experiments. So if you need to make sure that the molding that you put on the side of a car, some piece that gets glued to the side of a car, adheres properly, then what do we need to do? And then that will come down to what's the amount of time in the oven, or the amount of time for curing, or chemical composition of some additive. Those will be things that you can talk about to identify the key process characteristics to ensure that the pull-off strength of the molding is proper. Mm-hmm. So number one can be the subject matter experts using engineering judgment. Number two is the design of experiments. So you might do a DOE to establish that, the amount of time in the oven. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The third one is the process FMEA. And the process FMEA allows you to take the objective, the function of the process, which might be in the example of a molding that has to adhere to a side panel with a certain pull-off strength, that there's a function of putting that molding onto the side of the car, mm-hmm. and getting it to stay affixed. That process then has failure modes, which is it falls off or what have you. And the reason it falls off is going to get down to, which is the cause in the failure mode, is going to get down to manufacturing deficiencies. So it might have fallen off because it didn't have enough time in the oven, or it didn't have enough time of curing, or it didn't have the right chemical additive,
right,
in the adhesive. And so that manufacturing deficiency becomes a cause in the FMEA. And then depending on severity, how severe is it for that failure mode, and occurrence, mm-hmm. the likelihood of that cause, you can identify certain causes as key. In other words, certain manufacturing deficiencies, which are characterized as process characteristics, as key, and they become candidates. And that's a great way, a proper process FMEA is a great way to identify key process characteristics.
Well, now I got a question going back to the FMEA part. Is the severity of this process FMEA, is that informed by what the designs identified as key characteristics? Because if a molding falls off the side of the car, I'm thinking, okay, customer may be upset, but it's not going to kill anybody, or shouldn't, right? I'm thinking of the severity ranking of it. Is the car still works? It still rolls down the road. We still get point A to B. From my opinion, it would be cosmetic. Right? No offense to all the people that work really hard to make sure this stuff sticks on the side of your car. But if that's a key characteristic for that coming out of the design, well, that's our immediate customer is the design team saying, hey, build this thing for us. So I got to think that that's got to inform how important it is, not just to the end customer, but to the people paying for the manufacturing.
Excellent. And I agree completely with you. So the product team or the project team, through the use of FMA or DOE or however they do it, are going to identify certain key product characteristics. If they're safety related, like a torque mm-hmm. on a very important bolt that's holding something that's safety related, let's take that as an example.
Mm-hmm.
So the torque on a bolt that's a safety related item, then the process team has to say, well, how do we ensure that torque happens?
Right.
So you might have a torque gun that has to be calibrated.
Right, right.
So the process characteristic might be the calibration of that torque gun. And then that key process characteristic has to be controlled. So yes, and then in the FMEA, the bolt coming loose could be very high severity.
Right.
And so that's how it passes on from the product to the process. And yes, high severity issues tend to be very high candidates for key process characteristics. Some companies use severity by itself.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies use severity and occurrence both.
Mm-hmm.
Some companies use purely the judgment of the team.
Right, right. But you can see where, the safety part is going to rise to the top to pay attention to. And I think that's just appropriate. I think people do that with engineering judgment in general. I don't think anybody's trying to design something that's inherently unsafe, but it adds a bit of rigor. So you can get down a few steps below that to the things that, if you don't get that adhesive right, for example, it's going to really blemish the vehicle's performance. It's
yeah,
not critical, but it makes a big deal. If your dashboard laminate falls off every week or two, customers are not coming back.
It's amazing how you think about the introduction of, say, a next generation phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't pick on any particular company here.
Well, when this comes out, it will be very close to a couple of major announcements in that
okay.
realm. So, yeah.
All right. So if the screen goes blank a lot, and during an introduction,
mm-hmm.
you get a huge marketing, potential marketing black eye.
It's called
it's not safety related.
Right, right.
But so that screen, the characteristics for the screen to be of the right function can be very, very important to a company, even though they're not safety related.
Oh, yeah. And nowadays with the I call it the Yelp phenomena, just the online reviews, the Amazon
yeah.
reviews and stuff, you can sink a product.
Exactly.
And with 10 reviews, people are going to see that and go, hey, it's one star and they all make sense. And all right, I'm not buying it.
So loss of function can be a very critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't take too many of them to start on fire to cause a problem either. So.
That's right. Okay. So we've identified, let's say we've identified key product characteristics, and we might've used the design FMEA,
mm-hmm.
and we've identified key process characteristics for the widget, and we might have used a process FMEA. So then the question, Fred, becomes, what do we do with those? And then we get into the what's called the process control plan, and I'm going back to Duran, because
mm-hmm.
Duran is one of the original gurus that talked about process control plans.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where you take the manufacturing process and identify which product characteristics are critical that map to the manufacturing process, which process characteristics are critical that map to the manufacturing process. And that becomes the beginning of a process control plan. And then the methods column in the process control plan come from the methods, the control methods in the process FMEA. So you have a series of mappings
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
from design FMEA and process FMEA that map to the process flow diagram and the process control plan. And then the process control plan, you then fill out the rest, like sample size or
frequency of measurements.
Frequency
what
of measurements.
Yeah. Calibration of those. Yeah.
Yep. And then very importantly is the reaction plan. What do
That's
you do
right.
when you have a problem. So that's the whole nine yards, to use that metaphor,
okay.
of product characteristics, process characteristics, all the way through the manufacturing process.
You know, we're going to have to come back and talk about the process FMEA into the process control plan. I think that's a bigger topic.
Yeah,
you just outlined it here real quick. But it starts with, well, what's the customer need or want? What do we've heard from our customers? And it goes through all these things. And you summarized it really well. Now, for the folks that are listening, does this all make sense? I know Carl and I are going through it really fast in the span of two episodes for about 40 minutes. This could be careers for a number of people,
right?
to make this happen in your organization.
Yeah.
There's a lot up to it. So what kind of struggles do you have? And it's, Carl, I mean, we outlined a wonderful world where in theory, this works great. And we know it happens. We've seen it happen. But it does take work. And so there's going to be struggles with that. There's not going to be management buy-in. There's going to be the silos not wanting to talk to each other. There's constraints on time and resources all through our organization. So for those that are listening and you're nodding your head going, yeah, we need to do this. You need to do this. But you're also probably looking at, well, this is going to be tough. Well, how? Let us know. Go over to reliability.fm and you'll see the Speaking of Reliability series of podcasts and plenty of places there for you can comment and comment back to us or find our contacts under the About pages. And just let us know, what are the challenges you're facing in making this work? And I think that would inform us, Carl, to what would be a great set of follow-up sessions on this. If we can help people actually get over the hurdles, they're likely to be successful at this.
Makes sense to me, Fred. That'd be very good if we can get that feedback.
Yeah, that'd be excellent. So I think I've got notes on like three more episodes, but I'll defer those if we get comments back and we'll go with that. And it sounds like the construction in your kitchen is heating up or your grandson's awake, one or the other. I'm not sure.
Yep. Knocking on the door.
There you go. All right. Well, let's wrap this one up. And thanks, Carl. Oh, before I go, Carl, though, when this episode comes out, you'll be a couple weeks into your brand new series on Ascendo Reliability of articles on FMEA.
Yeah, it's called Inside FMEA. And it starts with a series of articles that are sort of introducing the subject of FMEA and what makes for good quality FMEAs, because I don't want people to just fill out the form. I want to actually improve designs, improve manufacturing processes through the use of FMEA. And then it goes into some of the fundamental aspects of FMEAs, and then into a whole variety of what I think are interesting topics. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
And the way you've got it structured, Carl, I really like is that every third article is a response to questions. And So we need to start feeding those questions. So let's plug that and say, you know, head over, check out Carl's initial set of articles. If you've got questions related to FMEA or using FMEA or how it feeds into other parts of the process, is, you know, send Carl a question. And I remember, Carl, that you mentioned that you always answer the questions directly.
I answer 100% myself.
And then eventually it'll show up on one of the articles so that others can benefit from the question and the answer.
Yep. In an anonymous manner.
That's right. So go check out Inside FMEA. It's under the articles tab on the Ascendo Reliability website. So come on down. It'd be one way to say it, Carl. All right. Well, I'm going to let you go, Carl, and see if you can. I don't know if it's getting close to lunchtime, your time, but I think you're going to be going out to eat outside anyway, given construction going on. So enjoy the rest of your day. For listeners, let us know what you think. Send over your questions. So thanks, Carl. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Fred.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.